Hello and welcome to a new English edition of my podcast Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikaus and my guest today is Benjamin Murphy, visual artist from England and co-founder of the Delphian Gallery.
Helium Talk.
How are you, man? How are you today?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, can't complain. Little bit concerned that I might have a broken ankle, but aside from that, I'm all right.
From skateboarding or?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah. Should we just get into it then?
Yeah, man. I'm ready when you are. Yeah.
All right, cool. So was art always the only option for you, or what was your path into becoming an artist?
No, art wasn't, to be honest, I didn't consider art as an option even really until, much later in life than I think people might imagine. I think I was probably 21, 22. Mm-hmm. As a child, I was I had a lot of energy, but it was very directionless. And I didn't really focus in school. I wasn't really, didn't find it interesting. And so I didn't really put any energy into it. And I wasn't a bad kid, but I wasn't a good kid either, really. And so when I was approaching GCSE age, so I was like 15, 16, you have to choose which GCSEs you want to do. So you get to drop things that you don't.
So it's like courses that you do at school to make your final exams. Okay, yeah, similar.
Yeah, so I dropped things like history and geography and religious education. I chose the more practical things like art and wood technology. And during art, and I basically chose them because they were kind of the easiest subjects and the ones that I could get away with most in.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I quite liked doing things with my hands, being practical. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, when I was doing art, I had a really good teacher basically for my final year. She was called Miss Henson. And she actually, I can pin it down to pretty much one day, one instance. I was being a bit of a nightmare and she basically made me sit in a corridor on my own. And I had to sit in this corridor for like 3 full weeks of art lessons. And she gave me 2 really ornate glass bottles on a mirror. And I had to just sit there on my own and draw them. And I was not sat near anyone else. So I couldn't do anything but draw these bottles. And after a while, I kind of got into it. And that was the beginnings, I suppose, of me being interested in drawing. But I didn't take drawing seriously for a long time after that, even. I decided I didn't want to stay at school after my GCSEs. So I left at 16, but I also didn't want to get a job in like a supermarket or what everyone else in my hometown was doing. So she encouraged me to go to art college. I did that. And then for the same reason, when I was finishing that, I didn't want to get a job in a supermarket. I went to university. Not that there's anything wrong with working in a supermarket, by the way. Some of my friends do. But I basically wanted to avoid joining the real world. So I did graphic design at university. From very early on in that degree, I realized I'm not a designer. But again, I had a good teacher who let me just draw. And so, yeah, it was kind of just a lot of avoiding the real world and avoiding responsibility and just doing what I found easiest, maybe. Maybe I took the easy way out in becoming an artist. Maybe that's it.
In the long run, maybe it's an easy way when you're starting out, but it's a decision that, you know, sort of it's not having an education and not, I mean, we have an education, but nothing, not, you know, sort of aiming for a profession that gives you security for the rest of your life. That's not necessarily the easy way. You know, I think in the beginning, it might look like that when you're an artist and say, okay, I'm just, you know, I don't want to face the real world, but there's a real world that surrounds you and that you somehow have to, you know, sort of deal with at some point. Yeah. So,
yeah, I think in looking back, because nowadays I have like a real passion for learning. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think at the time when I was at school, I was maybe not challenged in the right way. And so when I started exhibiting and started thinking about art as a career, it felt like this really intense learning curve. And I felt like, and I still kind of feel like I'm out of my depth a lot of the time and I don't know what's going on and I have to totally wing it. And I really like that feeling, the chasing the understand, like developing an understanding of something and building on knowledge. I have a real passion for, and I think art's a really good arena to be doing that in. I think that might be why.
Yeah. Hold on, I'm just. I see that point, but I mean, it's a decision that I have high respect for. If you just, you know, taking that way, not many people probably do. I'm not sure how your parents reacted when you said you're going to do art and not, you know, sort of take a real job. I mean, with me, I'm a little bit older, so it's a very long time ago. So my parents just had to, you know, sort of live with that. But I think it's something that when you get into art, it might, as I said earlier, might look like an easy decision, but you kind of have to find your way in there. And that's not just because you're just not say just doing art, but there's, when you look at your work today, I mean, that's basically all the work that I know, because that's most of the work that's visible now is the work that is online and that I can see from here. And that's that is very distinct, you know, sort of you have a very specific style and a very specific way to work. When did you develop your sort of like your own voice in art? When did that start?
I think, so this is because I'm a lecturer at a university, and with Delphian, I'm sure we'll talk about these things in a bit, but yeah. With Delphian, basically we do a lot with emerging artists. And one of the things that I get asked a lot is about creating your own personal style. And I think the wording of that question is kind of wrong, because I think creating a personal style is impossible, because that is like a decision you make to create your own style. It's not going to be authentic. And so I think style emerges through just repetitive actions. And so when you do something over and over again, you just naturally, your brain makes these little, it fills in little gaps for you and you do things, subconsciously without thinking about them. And then the more of those subconscious, like little, shortcuts that your mind makes when you're doing something, that's how your style, I suppose, emerges. So for example, whenever I draw, and this is an example I've given before, so forgive me if anyone's heard this, but when I draw a human eye, I only really see them in one way now. Like the mind becomes lazy. And so when I draw an eye, I kind of draw them pretty much the same way in every drawing. I mean, that's not to say that all of the eyes look the same and whatever, but like my brain lazily chooses which elements to include and which to ignore. And that kind of thing happens with everything. And I think that's where style comes from. So I think trying to make your own style, I think when you start out, a lot of artists will copy the work of other artists and, sure, yeah, and emulate things they like. And I think that's great, because that you're learning technique essentially. But yeah, your own, it's about finding your voice rather than creating it, I suppose.
Yeah, I think style is probably not the best term for it. The voice is, you know, sort of having your, that's like what I mean, basically what you want to say with your art. So voice is the best thing. When did you start to work in the way that you're working in right now, and where do you think that that's based upon? You just mentioned the fact that, of course, as an artist, especially in the times that we live, or we started out as artists, or especially today, you see all these, basically you have so much visual influence that when I was growing up, you know, sort of we had museums, hardly ever went to galleries, because they were like, you kind of didn't feel like you were allowed to be in there.
Yeah.
And you looked at books a lot, art books, you know, and at school, you know, you talked about the big masters. And I come from Cologne, and I was raised in a smaller town outside of Cologne, where which was the town where Max Ernst was born. So Max Ernst is a very influential artist for me, because I found that always extremely interesting through the you know, sort of because it was kind of close. He was part of this place where I was, you know, growing up. And so I definitely took some influences from there. Even if you don't see them in my art, you probably have never seen them in my art. But that was, there were little resources that you could go to. And now you go to the internet, you go to Instagram. And it's, I think it's very difficult today for a young artist to really decide, you know, maybe it's a subconscious decision to say, okay, I'm going to paint figurative. I'm going to try this out. I'm going to try to work with several techniques, but you're always probably, it's probably always easy for people now to compare things, you know, like, yeah, I've seen this before. And so how do you find, you know, sort of coming back to that, how do you find your own voice in that? I mean, the best way would probably to shut everything out at some point. But that's, I think these days, almost impossible to do.
Yeah, I think, I think it's about finding some sort of balance. Mm-hmm. I think you kind of touched upon the work I'm currently making and how long I've been doing that. It's actually not that long, to be honest. So I work predominantly now with charcoal on raw canvas. And I've only been doing that about a year and a half. And before that, I was making work with just black tape, essentially black electrical tape on glass. And I was doing that for quite a number of years. And it's very precise and very clean and very detailed and repetitive. And I was doing that for a number of years, and I was exhibiting that work, and I was exhibiting the work, I was selling and stuff. And so I started to feel a little bit trapped by it, maybe subconsciously, but I started to feel like my work was getting quite formulaic. So when I compare one of my works from like 6 years ago to one of them from 3 years ago, I don't see a huge leap in progression, really. And I think it's because I'd been making that work, I'd been exhibiting it, and I was kind of feeling like I had to continue on the same route and almost give people what they expected. And so I didn't feel like I had the freedom to just experiment and play and have fun with my work. And so a year and a half ago, I decided, actually, I need to be the person, I need to be excited by my own work. And if I'm not, then what's the point in making it anyway? So even if I'd wanted to kind of change it up and experiment more for a long time, but I hadn't done, because I thought, well, maybe what if people don't give a shit anymore? What if nobody's interested? But I thought, if I'm making it and I'm not interested in it, then why does it matter if anyone else is? So I decided to change it up a bit. And so now I'm drawing, I feel like I have a lot more freedom. Like, say, for example, the last artwork I did was of a bird, a heron. And when I was working with tape, that's just something I would have never done. I don't know why. I never would have thought about why I wouldn't have done it. But all of my work back then was very detailed, and it was very lavish and very figurative or like still life. So I've recently kind of decided to almost completely ignore what I think people are expecting me to do, and maybe allow myself to not be super consistent, and maybe allow myself to even be a little bit contradictory, maybe, and allow myself the freedom to not really have a very definite and concrete vision of what I'm doing. I'm allowing myself to kind of make the works and then see what I've made, rather than thinking, oh, well, people will expect this from me, so I have to make this, or that kind of thing.
I think that's a very, very process that you kind of probably have to learn on that. Not everyone, but, you know, so for me, I think it's a little bit similar. At some point, you come always to an area in your work where you kind of have to liberate yourself from the outside view. You know, of course, you're doing this work to be shown and to be seen at exhibitions, but I think work becomes stronger and much more focused when you're when you're getting rid of that, when you're able to get rid of that and you stop looking too much on it from the outside, but just, you know, sort of immerse into it and basically just don't give a fuck, you know. And I think that's very, that's a very important aspect of, you can see that with artists that are trying very hard, and it's not, I don't want to make them small or anything or feel bad about it. It's okay to think hard about things and especially in an artist practice. But it gets so much easier when you just let go, you know. But that also has a lot to do with experience. I mean, you have to go through phases, like you said. You have to do work differently and then maybe throw everything overboard, you know. I think in my artistic career that it goes on for a while now, I've done a lot of things that I'm not doing anymore and that I've gotten rid of, and there's a certain resource that I always can go to and that I kind of always implement. And it's not even about perfecting things. It's sometimes about, you know, sort of, look, I went to carve really realistically, which is very hard, you know, cutting into wood and trying to get a smile or anything. Everything that you cut is gone. You can't replace it. You can't erase it. And that was fun, but I've gotten much, much rougher again because I'm not aiming for these things anymore. I just want to get the expression, the people to understand what I'm doing in a completely different way. And I think that's what that takes a lot of practice, you know, that takes some time. So, but is it, I mean, the charcoal, that's a very interesting medium because it seems, you know, sort of you're limited to yourself, but when you work with tape before, there's also a big limitation in working with tapes. But is your process that, you know, I mean, for me personally, it doesn't look like you're working a lot in a sketchbook and prepare your paintings, but it's more, you sort of, you go to it, you have an idea and you start. How's that working for you?
Yeah, there is limitations in just using charcoal, but I think I like that. I like to essentially not really know what I'm doing and learn through making. Mm-hmm. And so the tape work that I was making was very precise and clean and detailed. And with it being tape on glass, if something was in the wrong place, I could move it essentially. So I basically tried to pick the most opposite to that I could find. So charcoal on raw canvas. So if anything's in the wrong place, it's there forever. I can't paint over it because it's unprimed canvas. I can't erase it. It's really messy, very imprecise. So I like the process of exploring the medium and that discovery and that naivety. Maybe exploring my own naivety with something. So I think that's why I kind of chose charcoal. Initially, I was painting in oils, and I still plan to keep doing that a bit, but they're still experiments. They're not really at the point where it would be worth showing anyone. They all just get cut up at the moment and binned. But I used to work in a sketchbook a lot. At the moment, I'm not doing at all. I do works on paper still. I'm not really sure why. I think with the tape drawings, they would take weeks to make, whereas charcoal is incredibly fast. Yeah. So I almost see the canvas as being a sketchbook now. I don't need to do the preparatory work that I would do previously. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why, yeah.
And you do you live in your studio? Do you have a studio where you work in, or what's your situation there?
No, currently I don't have a studio at all. So I split my time between London and Helsinki. And in London, I've been using the garage in my house up until probably January. My house is being sold now. So essentially, I'm still living here, but I've had to clear the garage out. Because I'm backwards and forwards to Helsinki, I've been in Helsinki for the past 2 months. So I've been using the basement in Helsinki, but now I'm back in London. I don't have a studio, so I'm looking into that.
So Helsinki, it's you have a residency there, or you work there, or
no? I don't currently have residency there. My fiance is from there, so currently in the process of applying for a residency, but obviously before January, I didn't need it. So
it's probably pretty difficult traveling back and forth now.
So
So when, as an artist, and you know, you've probably expected that question to come. It's you know, so pretty interesting. Your friend Nick Thompson, your co-partner at Delphian, he's also an artist, right? He's a photographer.
Yeah.
And so, where did that idea come from that you would go and venture into the gallery business? Because that's a big step.
Yeah. Again, that wasn't planned either. So, in fact, all of my kind of career choices haven't really been choices. I've just fallen into them. But
that's okay.
Nick used to run a magazine. He was the editor of a magazine, and they did a feature on my first solo show. And so I just met Nick that way. And then that was like November 2012, and then December 2012, I curated a group show, the same gallery that I had my solo. And because I'd met Nick from doing the feature on my show, I invited him to put some photographs in the show. We ended up hanging out a bit, and then we just became friends. And then years later, we curated a group show in my studio. And then years after that, we created this Instagram account called Delphian Gallery, and we just started posting artwork we liked. And then it's just totally snowballed out of control, and now it takes up like a really good big percentage of my time. But it was much more that we just decided to, like, obviously all our friends are artists, and we have a real interest in art, so we were just sharing artwork that we liked. And then all of a sudden it's become this thing. But again, that was never the plan.
So the idea was not to, like, a gallery in the traditional sense, but more like a gallery, you know, sort of like an online gallery, like on a website or it's on Instagram, right?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't even really think of it as a gallery. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, yeah, there was no motive behind it, or no, like, I think to begin with, we didn't even plan to do shows, really. It was just like, we were just sharing the stuff that we liked. And then obviously the more you do these things, well, the deeper your interest becomes in it, but also opportunities present themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's just built organically from where it began, really.
So then you started, but you did a couple of physical shows. I mean, you say it's a nomadic gallery, so you don't have a fixed space, which, you know, sort of makes a lot of sense, especially in cities like London or in the bigger cities, because it's just, you know, super expensive to run in space. But you did some exhibitions, probably with artists that you've, you know, sort of also discovered through doing, you know, online presentations of their work.
Yeah, I think we've done 15 shows now, right? 15 physical shows. So with each show, we'll just partner with a space, or we'll hire a space. Mm-hmm. We've got a show that's currently about to reopen at the Saatchi Gallery in London. We kind of roughly do a show every 2 months. I think for the past, not including COVID year, for the past few years, we've done, I think, maybe 7 shows a year. So a little over one every 2 months.
That's a lot. Not to organize next to your artist practice.
Yeah. I mean, the show we've got currently hanging at the Saatchi, that we had like a week and a half to plan that. They rang me on like a Monday, and they said, do you want to do a show? So I was like, yeah, sure. Before he gave me any of the details, he was like, all right, well, firstly, it's in one of the ground floor rooms, which are absolutely massive. I was expecting it to be in this basement room. So it's a huge, huge room. And he was like, oh, and it needs to open in like 9 days. And so usually we'll have 2 months pretty much to plan a show, because as soon as one show's hung, say the beginning of 1 month, we have like from that point 2 months till the next one opens. But this one, when we had a week and a half, it was by far the easiest and least stressful show to organize ever. So I think maybe that's the way to go. Maybe just give yourself a really short time frame, and then just during that little window of time, don't think about anything else, and get it done.
Well, traditionally, galleries usually plan at least a year or, you know, I don't know, two, some even longer ahead. And that's that is something that I find very difficult, especially in these times. I think it's a lot easier to think about, like, you know, like in a project way, you know, what's really what, because time moves so quickly and things move so quickly, and that hasn't got nothing to do with COVID or anything. It's any time now that we're living in. If you think about an exhibition you want to do, it would be great if you could realize it in the next 4, 5, 6 months, because you don't know what's happening in this time, and because things are moving very fast. Also, you know, being spontaneous with this is also a really, really nice aspect, because if you plan too long ahead, you know, sort of you can't really, I mean, you find something that you think would be a good addition to this, you know, and I mean, I think you guys have built a vast network through Delphian, but also, I mean, this other that's basically why I contacted you this week. I wanted to speak with you, I think, already last week, last year. So I think when you brought out your book, because I found that very interesting. And but then I this week, one of the artists that was having a weekly takeover on that site did an excellent, you know, sort of selection of artists, Ruzudan, you know.
Oh, Daily Contemporary Art.
Daily Contemporary Art. And it is one of the Instagram accounts you do run, right? It's also Delphian run. And so that's kind of like doing, it's a kind of like doing an exhibition these days. All the galleries, everybody's trying to do some virtual gallery, which is basically the same to a normal gallery, except for the fact that people, you know, can actually be there. And I think that is still very important for galleries and shows and art and the sales and all these things, and bringing people together and connecting in a personal way, standing in front of an artwork. But if that doesn't work, I think this kind of takeovers, you know, is a great way, you know, sort of to expand your, I don't know, your horizon in terms of which kind of artists are out there, because then you get all these different opinions. So basically every week you have a different curator running a show on this platform. But that was the initial idea of Delphian, and then you moved it to the second account, or?
Yeah, we created the Daily Contemporary Art page first. And so we were sharing work that we liked on there. And then I can't remember why, but we were just really busy. So we kind of tested the idea of just giving the account to a different person every week. So we kind of thought, well, if we just keep posting on this, we're just going to keep, I mean, we have a limited scope like there's only a certain amount of things we can see and discover. So we thought, why not let other people post on it? There's going to be much more broad. What is posted is going to be much more broad, because it's going to have different people posting every week. So that worked really well. So we then just continued that, and then we created this what was the second account, which was Delphian.
Mm-hmm. All right. So and then this, you know, the main reason I wanted to talk to you last year was you released a book with a bold name, with a bold title, Navigating the Art World, I mean, I see the necessity for books like that, but where did the idea come from that you're going, you know, sort of that direction? What's the intention is probably understanding, but what did give you the push to do this kind of book? I mean, it's a book with recommendations for artists, by people from the art world, right? It's a collection of opinions and theories. Yeah.
I mean, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, that wasn't really a decision either. That we kind of
felt like it.
Too.
I like that.
Yeah. So a few years ago, we did these series of interviews where basically we wrote six questions, mm-hmm. and then we asked those same six questions to about, I think, 45 different artists. And then when we got all the replies back, we split those up so that basically one question was answered by 45 people, and then we posted them as blog posts. So like one of them was like, what's the best book you've ever read? And then 45 people answered that. And so, yeah, so we did that. And then I was in a print studio. We did a solo show with a guy called Bertrand Fournier a few years ago. And I he cut some lino to make some lino prints for the show. And we brought them back to London. I went to a print studio to print them for him. And the technician in the print studio came up to me and he was like, is this Bertrand Fournier's work? I said, yeah, it is. And he was like, so you must be one of Delphian Gallery. I was like, yeah, I am. And so we got chatting and it turned out he's a technician at the university that I teach at. So another serendipitous kind of connection. And yeah, and he was like, I'm launching this, this small publishers. If you have any interest in doing a book. So our original plan was to do basically expand on those questions things and ask more questions to more people and almost be like the editors of a book. And just so through the process of starting to think about and work on this book, we started writing a lot of these essay style things. And we were doing a lot of reaching out to our followers through like Instagram stories and stuff and asking what they wanted to know about the art world. And so some of those questions we could answer and we wrote stuff for it. Some of them we couldn't, so we went to other people who could. So say, for example, collecting. I don't really know what a collector wants, so we spoke to Klaus Busch Risvik, who's a collector. And so, yeah, we kind of tried to make it very open and very like diplomatic in terms of where this information was coming from and whatever. But we also didn't want it to be like one of these to-do list books that's like, to be a successful artist, do all of this stuff and you'll succeed. We wanted it to be very much like, this is some stuff that we picked up. Hopefully it's helpful. Some of it might not be relevant. You might disagree with some of it, but here's just some stuff that might help, mm-hmm. rather than us trying to act like an authority on anything.
Yeah, which is also, I think it's impossible. I believe many artists, younger artists, just turn to your book and also to you as persons, which they're also doing to people who are in the business longer, or you know, so trying to understand and find a way how to become successful in the art world, or you know, and success is. Yeah, it's a big word. I mean, there's so many aspects of it. Success can be that you make exhibitions. You know, I think the expectations of every artist is also very different. There's definitely a lot of people out there who, you know, their expectation is to get rich and famous. But I think if you're an artist, when you get exposure and you get seen and you get, you know, sort of recognition and respect for what you're doing, I think that's also a fair goal, you know, and probably the one that is a little bit easier to achieve. So I think a lot of artists are insecure and uncertain where this is gonna lead them. I think that also has a lot to do with that. If you're going online, then you see, well, you see success, even though that doesn't necessarily have to be success. You know, you see people have a fantastic profile with lots of followers and maybe a nice studio and everything, but they never sell work. They never show at any gallery. They don't get recognition beyond, you know, sort of this platform. And so I don't know. I mean, do you feel that you could give this kind of advice to people when they come to you? I mean, or do you just say, just read the book, you know, and make your own choices? Or
I suppose it kind of could be classed as advice, but I wouldn't really like to say that I am in a position to give advice to anyone. Like, I think no two people are going to have the same experience and no two people have the same intentions, the same desires and the same opportunity. So we didn't want to make a book that was like, we are experts, here is what you need to do, because that wouldn't work for everyone. And also, that's not everyone's intention. Like, we were careful to not say, so we use the word navigate rather than say how to succeed, because success is different to everyone.
Yeah.
So it's more of a, I suppose, guidebook maybe, but But yeah, we also wanted to expose a lot of the, like you said, like insecurities and stuff that people face, because it's not just early career artists that have those concerns. Like, I know artists who sell for £20,000 a painting, and they have all the same insecurities and worries about their own work and if people are still interested, or if their work is sincere enough, or if they've become old news. I think everyone has these same concerns. And like you were saying, with kind of social media and the image we present to the world, especially being an artist, I think it's often feels like you just have to present this image of like ultimate success. Like, there's never any insecurities. There's never any like, it's just all plain sailing success. Because to say any different, I think people worry that maybe it might make me look like my work isn't desirable enough or whatever else. So I think artists, specifically artists more than maybe any other profession, feel like we have to present this image of just success to everyone. But to an early career artist, that can be really disparaging, because obviously no one's life and no one's career is perfect plain sailing the whole time, but we present that image to people. And so when as early career artists, we look at other people's careers, we think, why isn't mine like that? Or why am I not selling out every show before it opens, and why this and that? So yeah, we wanted to as well show that, like, it's tough, and everyone will experience that.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty fair point. I think that it's this business also, it's the gallery business as well. I mean, you experience that too. I always call it as like we're in the business of everything's beautiful. Even now in these dire times, where I'm very sure and convinced that a lot of galleries will have to close eventually, or change completely, and it's you still have a lot of galleries, especially, who still, you know, sort of pretend everything's great, and it's not, you know, it's simply not. No, if your gallery is closed, it can't be great. I mean, yes, you might make still some sales. Yes, you might make, you know, like in Denmark, you know, I hear from galleries that they sell really well to the rich people who are in the summer houses now and are looking at their walls and thinking, yeah, maybe the consultant can come by and sell me more work. But that's a pretty unique situation. You know, it's also it's a situation that only applies to very wealthy people, you know, so only to certain galleries. So I think everybody's always trying to look brilliant and fantastic and great. And I think that's basically, before, with what you said, you've already given very good advice to artists. It's also okay that things don't work out right now and that you are struggling. And for me personally, you know, I'm old. I'm, you know, I'm 53 now, and I've been, you know, sort of, I still have the same insecurities many times. I've run a gallery for almost 20 years. I've passed this on to my son now. So it's the next generation. He thinks completely different about many things. He doesn't have to make the same mistakes that I do, but he will do his own mistakes. And he has a different enthusiasm that I have about all this. And frustration is a very important aspect in my daily life as an artist. Nothing is easy, you know. But now I can turn all this energy into something sort of positive for me and my work and all these things. But when you're starting out, when you're a mid-career artist, when you're old, you know, and then there's always a struggle, because it's something very personal that you're creating. I mean, if you're not just trying to look good, you know, that's the other aspect. Of course, as an artist, you can always just try to make something that everybody likes and look good. Okay, that's fine. There's also a generation of artists now, because of the constant visibility of everything that you're doing, or the potential visibility of everything that you're doing, who are trying, you know, sort of to build a career upon that. That's also good. You know, we'll see in a couple of years how that will work out. Already seeing it, you know, sort of now, there's a lot of people that are successful with Yeah, I don't know, with imagery, with the visuals. I think the biggest advice to artists is, you know, try to find it in a voice, stay true to it and work on it, no matter what, you know, sort of people around you will say. You can't just make these three phone calls and be somewhere. There's always luck involved, a lot of luck. And I mean, you're basing a lot of your, your art market business, like the Delphine Gallery, like the book and all these things, you're basing a lot of the success, you know, so building it from Instagram, which is a tool of today, you know, probably the number one marketing tool for everyone. But there's, what's it going to be in 5 years or 10 years? And also, you know, sort of we have to question the, I don't know whether you're doing it, but I'm questioning, for example, the background of Instagram, of all these beautiful creative people, you know, sort of giving away content for free. It's a discussion that we're going to have to, there's already, you know, up and running, but not very, it's not very strong voice, because you don't want to, you know, sort of piss off the community. But it's something that, you know, sort of, you know, needs to be discussed, you know, like it's like Spotify, you know. Spotify is giving a little bit of money, at least to the artists that they've become big and rich with. And Instagram, you know, so they basically, you know, I mean, the two Instagram accounts that you're running, it's something you can go to every day and you find beautiful content that somebody has created for free, you know. And okay, you have a business model behind it, and an artist is basically a business model as well. There might be the painting, one or the other painting that, you know, gets sold. And I understand that the gallery should be there and should also maybe even pay Instagram for advertisement on there. It's fine, but as an artist, I think it's something where you could consider finding some kind of revenue model, you know. And then I think it's also okay for an artist to say, well, I don't want to be there. You know, and you're still an artist, you're still continuing with that. But how do you see the importance of something like Instagram when you're building a career as a young artist?
Well, I mean, Instagram is a tool and it's nothing more. I think some people see it as being the be all and end all of the art world. And it's absolutely not that. Yeah. And it's in some ways it's quite damaging because it promotes there are certain types of artworks that work really well on Instagram and there's certain types that don't. So I mean, it's a tool and it can be incredibly beneficial, but also it is only a tool. So it's not the be all and end all. But that being said, it is an incredibly powerful tool and it's a very, very useful one. And I think any artist that neglects it is kind of shooting themselves in the foot a little bit, because why wouldn't we use this tool that is useful? But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely not the be all and end all of the art world. And 5 years from now, it could go the way that MySpace did. So I think whilst it's important to kind of focus your time and energy on social media, it's also important to bring, I think we talk about it in the book, and I think we call it bringing your community closer to home. So, and I think a really good way to do that is through email, basically through a mailing list. There's a publisher called the Do Book Company, and they wrote a book about mailing lists and how essentially mailing lists will be around forever because email will be around forever. It stood the test of time already. So, I mean, Instagram could disappear. I mean, it's owned by Facebook now, isn't it? And Facebook used to be the platform where everyone would share their work. And there's an artist called Lou Ross, French artist, friend of mine, who did really well in the beginnings of the Facebook days in sharing his work and reaching a community and stuff. And likewise on Instagram. So he a couple of years ago shared the data basically of his reach on Facebook. And then Facebook changed up how it worked because they wanted to drive people towards paying for ads, and it became way less useful. And people aren't really using Facebook now to promote their work. So he shared what it went from in the past when it was really good to now. Or actually, I think he showed me that personally, but he did share the same for Instagram. So he used to get a lot more than he's currently getting, and it's because Instagram are changing their algorithm all the time. Yeah. I don't know if algorithm is the right word. People use it interchangeably when it's not necessarily the correct word, but they're changing basically their system. And so it's becoming less powerful than it once was, maybe. They're limiting the reach of what you post. So it could very easily become obsolete. Something could spring up and replace it, essentially.
Yeah, I think this one we've said, you mentioned the mailing lists and newsletters and emails. I think, yeah, that's still strong and important. And then also, you know, sort of has changed. I mean, when Helium Cowboy in the beginning, we built a newsletter base of like over, I think we had one point, we had 12,000 subscribers to your newsletter. And then Facebook came. And Instagram and all these things, and it gnawed away at our subscribers, you know, more and more unsubscribers, and then eventually, you know, sort of newsletter mailing list tools became better and better, so you could actually access who's actually still reading it. It was just going to spam or not opening it anymore, and then we did that. It's, you know, a couple of years ago, and then we cleaned out our newsletter list. And, you know, thousands were gone, you know, which is okay, you know, because you don't want to reach those people. And now for, I think, the past years, we have a very, very steady newsletter subscriber list. There's always a couple of people subscribing, always a few people unsubscribing, but it's steady. And we see that these people actually read what we're doing. So when we, you know, sort of, it always has to be, you have to have several tires, of course, you know, you have to have the mailing list, but yeah, you have to have Instagram these days, you have to have Instagram. And then there's a third thing that I've, you know, sort of always like to mention, which I think is very important for artists, and which, for example, for this interview now helped me to prepare. I can look on Instagram and I can look what the galleries write about you, but looking at your website, you know, shows me a little bit more about, you know, sort of you, because that is, you know, I always say it's like building your house. It's your foundation. It belongs to you. It's your, you own it, you know? And that I think is also, you know, sort of pretty important thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of people now try and use their social media, like their website, like they use their Instagram account in place of their website. And they're two very different things, and they both have very different attributes, and they're both useful in different ways. And I think the best approach, because any of these could disappear really, is to not use all of them. Like, I'm not on Twitter, or, well, I mean, I am on Twitter, but I don't really use it. I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on Pinterest. I'm not on loads of these things.
Yeah.
It's about choosing enough of them so that they all support each other without spreading yourself too thin and without unnecessarily neglecting any of them. So say, for example, Instagram is very useful, so I use Instagram. TikTok isn't really right for what I do because it's more video based, so I don't use it, but an artist who works in video probably wants to be on there. So yeah, I think it's about a combination of these things. And unfortunately, having a career in anything, especially one where you are kind of the driver of your own business, like any artist who wants essentially their hobby to become a career has to think of themselves as a small business, essentially. And when you think of yourself as a business, there's all of this admin that you have to take care of. So I mean, it's very tempting to just think, oh, well, I make paintings, so I'm going to make paintings and people will find them if they're good. But actually, there's a lot of admin that goes into being able to even spend your time making paintings. Because if you're not, unless you get picked up by a mega gallery really on in your career and they'll do all that for you, you have to do it for yourself. Otherwise, you're going to make paintings, no one's going to see them, and you're going to have to work another job. That was kind of another reason why we decided to do the book, was to try and make a lot of that admin easier, because it's not something that's often talked about. It's not glamorous and exciting, but it's necessary. And so the admin allows you to make more work, because you can get to the point where maybe you don't have to work another job if you don't want to, or you don't have to spend hours and hours and hours doing something that, with a little bit of understanding and a little bit of help, maybe you might be able to do a lot quicker.
Yeah, I agree. Where, if anyone's interested, where can they get the book?
I mean, you can get it from our website, or you can get it from various bookshops and stuff. So it's in a lot of galleries as well, yeah. Okay. Like the Tate and Saatchi and stuff.
Oh yeah, cool. So what's the next plans for Delphian?
Well, the Saatchi show is going to open soon, yeah. Once we're allowed. And I don't really know how much I'm allowed to say. We haven't really announced other things. We've got a few other shows. I mean, we've got all of 2020's shows to do at some point. And like
you said, postponed all of them. You know, you just
yeah
okay cool
yeah like you. I mean, there was one group show that we did as an online show because we had to, because it was like it was the 2020 open call show, and we had to do a 2021 open call. So that one we moved online, but yeah, like you were saying earlier, like it's because we essentially do plan like a year and a half in advance. Then it's difficult because you then continue discovering really exciting things and you want to fit it in somewhere. So we've got a few things coming up there. There might be some super soon. I mean, we've got loads of things.
But it depends happening. On the situation, of course. Now what's the last question, what's next for the artist Benjamin Murphy?
Well, it depends whether you're listening to this podcast in the past or in the in the future. But I have a solo show opening in May with Lychee One Gallery.
Okay. London.
Yeah. So that was going to be an online show, online only show. But then COVID restrictions are loosening up a bit. So it's going to open in the gallery for one weekend.
Okay,
nice. And then it's going to be online for a month, but it is going to have a little COVID holiday for a weekend. And I'm doing a group show with this gallery called Gobstopper Gallery, which is based in Philadelphia. That'll be just online because of COVID. Yeah. And I'm doing a residency, hopefully, in Holland in July. So COVID will say whether that happens in July or not. But
everything is uncertain right now. All right, but Benjamin, thank you for taking the time talking to me today.
No problem. Thanks for
very much. Interesting. I mean, I probably don't have to recommend people to follow you guys, because most of them that listen to my podcast probably follow you already. But if not, then you know, sort of easy to find. Probably first entry is Instagram, right? At Delphian Gallery. Thanks for doing this. I enjoyed this a lot, and all the best for the future of your many ventures.
No problem. Thank you for the invite.
All right. Bye.
Cool. See you later.